Coming up today on Seahawks Forever, you're going to like this one. Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, he's been covering the Seahawks for almost 20 years, so the entirety of the Pete Carroll era. He's going to give us his thoughts from ground zero of what he thinks of this new regime. Got to see the players interacting with the staff the last couple of days. Got to listen to the players speak at VMAC a couple of days ago. He's got some interesting insider knowledge and thoughts about what's going on there at the VMAC. We're also going to talk a lot of draft. Does he think the Seahawks are tipping their hand by the players they're bringing in for top 30 visits? What does he think's more likely to happen? Stick and pick at 16 or trade down? And how serious are they about taking a quarterback at some point in this draft? Lots to get into with Greg Bell, the Tacoma News Tribune, coming up next on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
I'm going to begin today's show with a massive shout-out to Tony. You know who you are. Tony in Montana has been a big supporter of the show, big supporter of mine. Followed each other on Twitter for quite a while. He's always been really gracious with his praise of the show and what I've been doing here, and showed his thanks by sending me a care package yesterday full of Montana-based craft beer. I think to this point, the only Montana beer I've ever drank is Big Sky. Certainly drank my share of Moose Drool and Trout Slayer. Boy, it's been a long time. Now it's taking me back, among others. But I don't recognize any of the cans that he sent to me yesterday. And so those are chilling and waiting for the weekend. Can't wait to dig into those. Thank you so much, Tony. You know, you can buy me a coffee or a beer to support the show. And he took that a little more literally and sent me that package. If you wanted to do it virtually, though, that link is in the description. Also, let's get this business out of the way before we get Greg on. Hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell so you get notification of all future episodes. On audio, subscribe on any podcast platform you prefer. And if you want to listen to episodes without ads, you can do so on Spotify. It's a very small monthly fee, but you can subscribe there. That link will be down below as well. And you also might see a button right down here for a super thanks if you want to contribute to the show in that manner. No more stalling. Let's get into this. My conversation today with Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune. Greg, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to join the show. You have been covering the Seahawks for almost 20 years now. Your first time in the building in about 15 years with a new coaching staff. What's your sense of them and how they're coming together and how they're conducting their business?
Well, thanks for having me, Dan. You guys do great work for Seahawks fans, and I'm honored to join you.
Thank you.
It is so different that normally this time of year, Dan, the players come for these off-season meetings and the first part of the off-season workouts, and they're just almost perfunctory. They just go in, the same thing they've heard for 14 years under Pete Carroll, the same program, the same way they practice, the same playbooks, the same terminology. Absolutely all of that is new now. Not only is Mike McDonald the new coach, some people are overlooking the fact there are 21 new assistant coaches. Yeah. All three coordinators are new. What that means is every single thing in terminology is new. I asked Geno Smith this week, does that mean red is now blue and one is now two? And he laughed and said, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And so if you've never been to Germany and you're thrown into Germany and you have to speak and listen and hear German and understand German for the first time. That's where Geno Smith, Tyler Lockett, Kenneth Walker, the offensive line, DK Metcalf, all are, especially on offense, and it's the same for defense. So these guys, these 2 weeks, are studying like they're trying to get into med school to get ready for just to be on the practice field in 2 weeks when the second phase of the offseason workouts begin, when they start getting on the field. So that is completely new, and it's new to McDonald and his staff too. We have tried to pin McDonald down to say, are you just bringing your Baltimore Ravens schemes and defense that was so confusing last year, changing fronts, Were they in one high or two high safety coverage? They changed after the snap, completely befuddled C.J. Stroud in the playoff game. Is that what we're getting in Seattle? And McDonald has said more than once to us, I don't know. I don't know what we're good at.
Yeah.
He barely knows the first names of all the starters he's going to have on that defense. So all that's to say is this is going to be a process. And it's going to be fascinating for me, having seen this for so many years of just kind of going out there and really OTAs, mini camps, and training camp. I'm just taking attendance to see if anyone's missing unexpectedly. Well, now it's I'm going to be watching everything. Is there going to be music at practice? How are they training? Is special teams going to be at the beginning, middle, or end of practice? Carroll used to put it at the beginning and the middle. Everything is going to be completely new to these guys, and I think it's going to refresh guys like Tyler Lockett and Geno Smith, because it's going to have them relearn something that for the last 10 years they've kind of been doing the same thing.
Yeah, you wonder if they're going to wear the tape on their helmets this year with the names on them. You said refresh, but I would think it would add an everyone's going to have to come in with an edge now too, because everyone's on even ground like this. The competition is on, ironically, after moving on from the guy whose competition mantra was sort of, you know, a big part of his legacy. And you talk about change and things being different. So much was made of the basketball hoop not being in the meeting room.
Yeah.
And some fans are not happy about that on Twitter. I saw, you know, there's a lot of backlash there. And then the comments that Uchenna Nwosu made, and classic case of, if you watch the interview, you know, there didn't seem to be any malice behind it. It's just a football player kind of coming to grips with his current situation. But he said things like, players are smiling again. There's a breath of fresh air. That's the locker room is closer. Feels like the right coaches are in place now.
We've got the right coaches.
Yeah. There were some questions at the end of last year about effort. And that, you know, that maybe the message just got stale after a while. Is that the sense you get, or is it just a player, you know, kind of rationalizing and trying to come to grips with his current situation?
Well, two things, Dan. First, Uchenna Nwosu was trying to explain that, okay, they've made this change and they've got the right guys. They've got the right coaches. I didn't take it as an indictment on Pete Carroll. What I took it as was Nwosu and others on the defense thinking that maybe they didn't have the right coordinator schemes and position coaches on defense. And, I mean, Clint Hurt, we love him. And he was a great guy, great person, and what he represents. He lost his mother during last season, and I talked to him about that. But he was also handed a scheme that no other defensive coordinator, not Gus Bradley, not Dan Quinn, has ever had to run under Pete Carroll in Seattle. And that was Carroll changing to more of a Vic Fangio 3-4 hybrid than the straight 4-3 single high that they ran in their Super Bowl heydays. They didn't have the Jimmys and Joes to run those X's and O's, so Pete Carroll changed the X's and O's. That's basically what happened the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But the result was they got worse on defense. So guys like Nwosu came from the Chargers thinking he was going to go into a 4-3 where the primary edge rushers were stand-up defensive ends, Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett types. And he was put into a 3-4, even though he played 3-4 in the Chargers. It wasn't new to him, but it was new to everybody around him. And now all of a sudden, their primary edge rushers are the outside linebackers, and you only have two off-the-ball linebackers, your two inside linebackers. You had inexperienced and new to the team defensive ends. You had a thin defensive line. They had to bring back Jaron Reed to give him any kind of stability in the middle of the defensive tackle. They lost out Woods, who was a stud for them over the center. All of that combined to have the 30th-ranked run defense become the 31st-ranked run defense last year. So, to me, that's what Nwosu's comments were. Then the second part of all of this is Nwosu knows, first of all, that he's at a point in his career, 27, $59 million contract with $32 million guaranteed. His place is firm. He's coming off an injury. While it may be less of a clean slate for him because the Seahawks really need him. He's great as a three down against the run, as well as a pass rusher. But the clean slate competition that you're talking about is absolutely on everywhere else. Can Boye Mafe be a run stopper opposite of Nwosu? Is Jaron Reed going to be what Mike McDonald wants inside? I mean, the fact that they've Tavondre Sweat, the defensive tackle from Texas, has been on a pre-draft visit. He's 366 pounds. He's a younger Al Woods. that suggests that Mike McDonald wants to go back to what the Seahawks had 3-4 years ago in the middle of their defense. Not so much the 298-pound speed nose tackle, but a big nose tackle. Darrell Taylor is back off a contract that most people thought he wasn't going to get at the end of his rookie deal because he was so ineffective the last couple of years. Can McDonald maximize his talents, which obviously are rushing the quarterback, but not stopping the run? And we haven't even talked about the secondary yet.
Right.
Two brand new safeties starting in the middle. Julian Love is now the guy, now that they've gotten rid of Diggs and Adams. So on defense, it is entirely a blank slate. And Nuosa's comments, I wouldn't take as an indictment of Pete Carroll, but in fact, the entire defensive system the last 2 years, which obviously didn't work.
Yeah, and it's easy to talk yourself into the good things that we think we see on that defensive side of the roster, because even though, you know, brand new linebackers, brand new safeties outside of Julian Love, they bring back the cornerback room intact. They bring back the edge group intact. As you said, that defensive line is light years ahead of where it was this time a year ago. But yet there's all the things that you touched on that we don't know. And we don't know how the coaching staff feels about all those players, how they plan to use them, what they think they still might need. In that sense, I'm fascinated by where they sit in the draft this year, because, you know, much has been made of the fact they don't have a second round pick. They sit right smack in the middle of the first round. That's often,
I think they're going to get that second round pick, man.
That's my question. Like, there's so much talk about that 16th pick, and it's not going away because the Seahawks are spending a lot of time meeting with guys that are projected to not be there at 16,
right?
Or be really logical picks in that range, but I'm intrigued this year that John has talked so little about moving down, whereas in years past, he's made it known to everybody that he'd like to have more picks. I think you just gave it away, but you expect that to happen?
9 of the last 12 years, Dan, as we know, he's traded his original first-round pick. He accomplished it at the combine. He's accomplished it since. The first thing he wanted the league to know, and he did the same thing last year, is that the Seahawks are interested in the quarterback. Unsolicited, every time McDonald or Snyder has a microphone in front of him, he says, "I've only drafted 2 quarterbacks in 14 years."
Right.
Alex Magoo was one of them. It's become a joke on our Seahawks beat, that stat. It's like a trivia question now. Mm-hmm. And he wants the league to think he's going to have draft a quarterback. Why is he doing that? Because he wants to attract possible and best trade offers from any team below him, or that wants to get a second first round pick. Say it's Minnesota, want to get a third first-round pick, or he wants to attract any and all offers with the league thinking he wants to get a quarterback. When I went to the combine in Indianapolis the first days of March, I thought that the best-case scenario for Seattle and a most likely play was going to be they are going to trade down from 16 to recoup that second-round pick that they lost from Leonard Williams' trade, but that they still could get Michael Penix in doing that. Since then
– yeah.
You don't always believe the buzz, because this time of year, about 60% of what's said, reported, and leaked is a lie. And it's just a ruse and trying to get you off the scent of what a team really wants to do. But it doesn't appear Penix – there are some. I'm going to talk to Dane Brugler on KGR today. I'm going to interview him later today. And he thinks Penix is going to go to the second round.
Okay.
Most people don't.
Yeah.
So it appears the Seahawks wouldn't, if they do trade down from 16 to go either second round or late first, Penix might not be there. But if they do trade down from 16, they can still address what really is the most pressing issue for Seattle, and that's the line of scrimmage to compete with San Francisco. Dan, they are never going anywhere. I mean, no home playoff, not win the division to get home playoff games, and if no home playoff games, not going to the Super Bowl until they get better on the interior offensive and defensive lines to play the 49ers. It has been boys against men when Seattle and San Francisco have played the last 2.5-3 years on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And until that changes, the Seahawks they're going to be a 9-8, 10-7 wild card, maybe win a first round game, then go on the road to Philadelphia or Green Bay or Detroit in the second round, season over.
Yeah.
And that's what we've had for the last 10 years. So to me, they should still, and probably will still, trade down. There's no way John Schneider's going to sit from 16 to 81 and play solitaire for a day and a half during the draft. He's not going to do it. So he's going to trade down to get the second round pick he doesn't have. The question is he going to trade down to stay in the first round, or is he going to get multiple picks in round two? Or where is that first pick of the Seahawks draft going to be? And then they can go refortify their either interior offensive or defensive lines. The problem with that, of course, Dan, is then you still don't have a quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
They have a quarterback of the present. Geno Smith for sure this year, the money they've committed to him. People don't realize Sam Howell's contract and Geno Smith's contract end the same time at the end of the 2025 season. Sam Howell is exactly like Drew Locke was 2 years ago. The Seahawks traded for a young quarterback who's already started in the league, who once led the league in interceptions and has 2 years left in his rookie deal. That's exactly what Drew Locke was at the beginning of 2022. Yeah.
Similar play styles, too.
So that's what Sam is. It is. And somewhat of a gunslinger. Mike McDonald has said at the league meetings that they think they love Sam Howell's future and what he can be. Does that mean they're going to re-sign him beyond 2025 without him having played at all for them? Because if it goes exactly as they hope this year, Geno Smith will take all the meaningful snaps unless there's an injury. So they don't have a quarterback of the future. The time was like 2 years ago to draft it, but they still haven't drafted him. When does that happen? And if you're not going to use your first pick, how ready will that guy be in 2 years to be your starting quarterback? So I think I've been told and believed that if Anthony Richardson hadn't gone to the Colts right above them at four last year, that they'd already had their quarterback of the future. Mm-hmm. Been Anthony Richardson at five. But because that didn't happen, they still don't have their quarterback. So it almost makes too much sense, Dan, that Michael Penix, the Seahawks draft Michael Penix because of Ryan Grubb and everything. And the Seahawks never do what makes too much sense in the draft. They always zag when we think they're going to zig.
Yeah, that's a scenario I've played out in my head a million times. Is, you know, at the end of this, are we going to look back and Michael Penix is a Seahawk and we think, of course he is. Mm-hmm. We should have seen it coming. So I think you've answered one of the biggest questions on a lot of Seahawks fans' minds. And you know we're going to hear this. If they take a quarterback, when they take a quarterback at some point in this draft, especially if they trade down, I feel like, and accumulate some extra picks, it opens some things up. You know what you're going to hear? Well, why'd we trade for Sam Howell then, right? I've been making the argument that especially when you're in the middle of the pack, you're not drafting the top 10. It's so much harder to get quarterbacks now because teams just – I've heard the term overvalue. I don't know if that's fair. It's just you have to take as many bites at the apple as you possibly can. To me, it makes a lot of sense because nothing's ever guaranteed, but you're doubling down on the position, giving yourself multiple chances to find a guy. If you put Howell together with someone else in that quarterback room, you just increase the odds, especially with a draft next year that most people seem to think isn't really great, at least not a year out, that you give yourself two chances to find the next guy, right?
Right. And honestly, the only reason Sam Howell's here is because he's started. He threw the most passes in the league last year. He has experience starting, game planning, reading film, and preparing 17 times to play an NFL game. And he's still on his rookie contract. Inexpensive. Yeah. So you have an experienced starter at bargain basement prices. Now, what he becomes and what he could be for Seattle and what he could be after this contract, again, who knows? But they at least have a backup. I mean, I keep thinking of Trevon Boykin. I lived through that, and Snyder spooked himself for the rest of his career having Boykin being the number two that year.
Yeah.
Because they were so sure that Russell Wilson would never get hurt.
Right.
And then Boykin had to play. And ever since that season, Dan, look at who they've had at backup quarterback.
Vets.
Huntley, they traded Green Bay for Huntley because he had starting experience. Yeah. Then they signed Geno Smith. Then they traded for Drew Locke. Then they traded for Sam, all of whom have had started NFL games before, because they don't want a Trevon Boykin situation anymore. If you just say, to answer the question, why did we trade for Sam Howell, they didn't want to draft a quarterback to automatically become Smith's number two, who's never played before. Now, someone they would draft, they would hope would be better than Trevon Boykin was, but the point is they wanted somebody who's done the job already to be the number two for the break glass in case of an emergency situation. That has happened before. So
yeah, and a lot cheaper. I mean, if you sign a traveled vet who started games on the free agent market, it's $4 or $5 million.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the only time the Seahawks have been to the Super Bowl in the last 20 years, and the only time they've won it, is when their quarterback was under a rookie deal, outperforming the money he was getting.
Right.
And that's how Jalen Hurts and the Eagles got there. And you can look it down the line of the quarterbacks in the last generation teams that get quarterbacks performing under their rookie deal at a championship level can then buy the rest of their team and for fortify around them. And that's what the Seahawks did to go to back-to-back Super Bowls a decade ago.
If you take out that 2021 draft, which was COVID affected, only three players because they preferred to trade picks for vets.
Oh, you mean the Eskridge draft?
Yeah, Eskridge, Forsyth. Yeah, absolutely. The not Creed Humphrey draft is what we like to refer to that as. John Schneider, under John Schneider, Seahawks have averaged 9.5 picks in their drafts.
You know, Dan,
never less than eight.
People ask me all the time, why does John Schneider trade down all the time? The reason is, one, he loves the draft and he has supreme confidence in himself and his personnel staff to go find Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman again in round five. And he's firmly believes that the best value is to get big picks at the end of the second and third day and maximize those guys. But the second reason is, and some Seahawks fans have heard Snyder say this, they rarely have more than 20 or so guys pegged as first round talent in any draft. Mm-hmm. And because they've been in the playoffs so often, they always are picking above the threshold of where they have first-round talent ending. So they don't, in their minds, think it's justifiable to spend a first-round pick with a potential fifth-year guaranteed option on a second-round talent. So instead of doing that, I'm not going to pick the second-round talent on our board at 24 or 25. I'm going to go get an extra pick by trading down because he's a second-round guy anyway and get multiple second-round picks. Now, at 16, that's a little bit different calculus. The Seahawks usually have at least 16 first-round players on their board. But that is the rationale for trading down. And if they don't trade down this year, it's because they had far more than 16 on their first-round talent players on their board.
And they grade different. I mean, John always uses the phrase that they grade for themselves and their own roster and not the rest of the league. Right. You know, they had a first-round grade on Derek Hall last year that we found out after the draft. Probably not a lot of other teams did. Another reason why they feel comfortable moving down, there might be a guy they like better than other teams.
Frank Clark's another example a few years ago.
Yeah. And as we look at the reported top 30 visits so far, there's about 19 or 20 of them that have come to light. It's, you know, some teams use these, they use a little bit of smoke and mirrors. They want to show a little misdirection. They don't bring in guys they're really interested in. This year seems to be a little more upfront to me anyway, because of some of the names they're focusing on. Again, guys that are projected to be slightly above 16 or might be a little bit of a surprise if they make it there, or might lend you to think that, well, he might be a stick and pick type candidate. But overwhelmingly, the position breakdown of the 30 visits that we've seen so far, almost all front seven, almost all defensive linemen and linebackers. As much as most of the fans out there want us to focus on offensive line early, is this a case of just maybe we need to believe what we're seeing and that this is a little bit of a tell which way they're leaning?
Well, Dan, I've evolved in this in my 15 years covering Schneider. The first half of Schneider's stint here, it was almost a tell the other way. If they talked to somebody at the combine or brought him in for a visit, they weren't drafting him. It was a complete smokescreen. And almost every year, every player drafted, we talked to him as soon as he's drafted. Minutes later, we get him on a conference call in the Seahawks headquarters. And they all, every to a man for years, would say, "I never talked to the Seahawks. Yeah. I had no idea they were interested in me." Well, that started to change about 3 or 4 years ago, right pre-pandemic, where they did start to bring in guys. And you saw Boye Mafe and Devin Witherspoon and others, Jerick Reed last year, to name two of them, come in on visits and then get drafted. So that has shifted in the last few years. And the Seahawks are less coy in trying to trick the league than they are just finding out more about players that they're interested in.
Yeah.
Chop Robinson, the edge of Penn State, that's been on a visit. T'Vondre Sweat, I already mentioned, it's 366-down defensive tackle from Texas. The kid from UCLA, Grayson Murphy, who's not considered to be Latu, the number one edge rusher out of UCLA.
Not even considered to be the best of the two twins.
Correct. Right. And so he's a later round pick.
Yeah.
A guy like Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa, who most people think is going to be a day three guy. I've talked to people about Christian Boyd who think that he can be an impact, even perhaps outside three or five technique defensive lineman in the NFL. Chris Jenkins from Michigan, most people think are going to go if not first round, late first round, early second. They're interested in him. Jared Verse, they've had in a top 30 visit from mm-hmm. Florida State. Many people think he might be in the top 10 and could be the first or second player behind the Alabama edge rusher, in first or second defensive player taken in the draft. So they are kind of both in top guys and later round guys, the visits that they've had so far, at least reported to have. Interestingly enough, though, Dan, they've also Spencer Rattler, quarterback from South Carolina, who most people think is below the upper, he's on the third tier of quarterbacks. John Reese Prumley from Central Florida, another quarterback who's considered to be a late round pick, used to play at Mississippi. So that tells you that they are at least considering quarterbacks, and quarterbacks that aren't among the ones that people are going to think go in round one.
Yeah, if that is, you know, if you talk about tells, they have met and are meeting with a number of guys that would seem to fall into that second round range, which might tell you that they do intend to get back into that range. And yeah, I think between the combine and the top 30 now, if you add Rattler to that group and make it seven, they've talked to everybody except Caleb Williams and some of them at length. I'm fascinated by that. On the offensive line, because this is such a big focus, and John himself continues to talk about it, they have met with a number of veterans, guys that have started games in the league, all different shapes and sizes. Like Lakin Tomlinson is a big dude known as a mauler, 340 pounds at times. And then they've met with guys that are, you know, Greg Van Roten's 305, a little more mobile. Cody Whitehair is another one who's played some center also, which is interesting. Do you expect them to sign a guy in the next couple of weeks? Brady Henderson reported a couple of weeks ago he did expect a vet signing, or do you think they're going to wait and see how the draft goes and they're vetting these guys in the event they want to add one afterwards?
Yeah, at this point, Dan, now that they haven't added Whitehair or any of those Lakin Tomlinson that they've looked at, they're going to wait till after the draft, I would think, and see what their roster looks like and whom they ended up drafting on the offensive line, and then sign someone May, June. They often sign guys in May or June in the interior offensive and defensive lines. They've done that for years. I don't think they're going to use their first pick in the draft on a guard, but more likely they would use it on a tackle who can play guard. Tufunga, really interested in him. They at the UW Pro Day, they were all over him. And Snyder was front and center for all of his workouts. He chatted him up before the workout started. I was at the UW Pro Day. And Snyder wanted everyone at that building to realize that he really liked the UW starting right tackle, stud tackle for the last couple of years. A lot of people in the NFL think he can be a guard. The kid from Mount Tahoma, Talese, his last name
Fuaga.
Is escaping me.
Oregon State.
From Oregon State, is considered to be the best most proven run-blocking tackle in the draft because Oregon State runs 56% of the time. They would absolutely take him, but most people don't think he's going to be available at the end of the first round. Fuaga in Washington, the Washington tackle, is an interesting – if he's available, because he can play multiple positions, because they know him well, because now they have Scott Huff as their offensive line coach from UW, and they have Ryan Grubb as the offensive coordinator, it would be a very interesting pass if they wouldn't take him if he's available at 16. You could always argue the same thing about Penix. So they have to, Dan, fix the offensive line. Philosophically, they have just said, we're going to make do. We're going to do the college basketball players, George Fant. We're going to do the former defensive tackles. We're going to just mix and match on the offensive line. We're going to move Justin Britt to three different positions. We're just going to figure it out.
Right.
Well, that hasn't worked. Even when Russell Wilson was at his best, it was despite his offensive line. I keep citing this. You probably either heard it or read it. Do you know how many centers they've had in 9 years since they traded Max Unger?
Almost a different opening day center every year, right?
Nine centers in nine years.
Yeah.
Nine starting centers in 9 years. And that has to end. And you would think that's why they drafted Ogunlowi-Timi, so he would be the odds-on favorite to be the starting center this year for the next 3 years. But he only got one start last year because Evan Brown was here. They did sign Nick Harris, the former Huskies all Pac-12 center from Cleveland, as a free agent. But he's also, people don't realize, he also played guard in Cleveland. So.
Yeah.
And he's only on a one-year minimum salary deal. So other than Oluwatimi, they don't have long-term answers in the center of the offensive line. They have their tackles signed through the next few years. But their right tackle, Abe Lucas, they're not sure when he's going to get back on the field after the offseason knee surgery. So they don't have the starting left guard because the guard market blew up on him and Damian Lewis got $53 million from Carolina. They have an unproven center they drafted last year in Oluwatimi in the fifth round. They don't have a right guard because Phil Haynes remains unsigned and was beset by injuries when he was here. And I told you, and we just mentioned your right tackle, Abe Lucas, is unsure when he's going to get back on the field. I just mentioned 80% of the offensive line.
Right.
So yeah. They have to fix it for more than just stopgaps 1 year that they've been trying to do for the last decade.
And we really don't know what style of offensive lineman they're looking at. Again, to bring in someone like Laken Tomlinson, it would seem to sort of work against the prevailing notion that Ryan Grubb prefers mobile guards that can get out and move in the screen game, which is something fans would love to see because they haven't been a very good screen team for years. The Seahawks haven't. And so we don't know. And then you think about a guy like Anthony Bradford, that's not his game, right? No, he's a bigger
masher.
Yeah. He's massive as well. You mentioned Oluwatimi. I wanted to ask you about him. If you get any sense, because I haven't heard him name dropped a lot. Like they spend a lot of time talking about reminding us about McClendon Curtis. They spend a lot of time talking about how much they like Tremaine Antrim.
Never start an NFL game.
Right. Do you get any sense that they still consider Oluwatimi a guy that can be the long-term starter there?
Right now they do because they don't really have anybody else under contract beyond this year. But I thought Oluwatimi was going to be the starting center last year. Evan Brown was on a minimum salary, non-guaranteed, low-risk deal, and I thought Oluwatimi was going to beat him out into training camp and they would just cut Evan Brown. Brown's communication skills and ability to read defense is one out there. And they feared having Oluwatimi with no experience doing what Brown was really good at. Now, Brown wasn't as stout in the interior. He was a little bit lighter. And Oluwatimi physically had an advantage over him. But I was told and got the sense that they valued Brown's ability to read defenses, call protections, and communicate. So now Oluwatimi's a year better at that at the NFL level than he was last year. But he only made one start.
Yeah.
So I would expect Oluwatimi to be the starter, and they hope, for the next 3 years. We'll see if that pans out. He was the Remington Award winner in Michigan, even though he's a fifth-round pick.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get every opportunity to be the guy for multiple years, finally.
Which it makes sense, and you touched on this earlier, to target guys who have positional versatility because of the unknowns, because we don't really have anything set at the guard positions, and we don't really know, despite John Schneider saying he'll be ready week one, what Abe Lucas's knee is going to look like, or even if it's going to be 100%, or if it's chronic, or any of those things. It does seem like, with everything that you've kind of just laid out, like, at the end of the day, especially given the depth of the interior offensive line class in this draft, much deeper than it is at defensive tackle or edge, those seem to fall off a lot quicker after the second round, that the plan would seem to be, the one that makes sense anyway, get the best defensive player you can early and then maybe double down on offensive linemen later because it's just a deeper group.
This draft in particular, Dan, Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl executive director, has talked about how because of the COVID years in college and how guys are still taking their sixth and fifth extra years in college, that'll end next year. This draft class really drops off for day three. That rounds 5, 6, and 7 are bereft of NFL-ready talent compared to any other years. So to your point, if they need to get players that they think can play right away, odds are that needs to come in the first 3-4 rounds.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when are you ever going to draft your quarterback? You've only drafted two of them in the last 14 years. So that all portends John Schneider trading down from 16 to get multiple picks in rounds 2 and 3 that he currently doesn't have so that he can get that talent before round 4 when the draft class really falls off. Now, again, he and his staff really pride themselves on finding the gems in round 5, 6, and 7. But just the pure numbers because of these COVID guys staying in college and the NIL deals that they get they get hundreds of thousands of dollars to stay in college that they never used to get, that the draft class is really the dynamics of this class in particular fall off on day three. So I would look for Seattle, if that is true. Jim Nagy knows what he's talking about. He's really good.
Yeah.
If that is true, I would look for the Seahawks to stock up on the front half of the draft more than perhaps they usually would.
And before I let you go, one position group that I want to ask you about, because I don't think anyone's really talking about it, and maybe even less so after the signing of Laviska Shenault a couple of weeks ago to a veteran minimum deal, but a guaranteed veteran minimum deal. It's, you think they're done shopping for wide receivers, or given Tyler Lockett's age and the fact that two of your wide receivers carry two of the biggest cap hits moving forward on this roster, and it's another deep class, seems to be the story every year now coming out with these college offenses. Do you think they're prioritizing getting a receiver out of this group?
Well, Dan, I've covered enough Seahawk drafts with Snyder to know it wouldn't be a Seahawk draft without him drafting a wide receiver.
Usually fourth round, probably, right? Fourth round.
It could be anywhere. I mean, yeah. First round last year with JSN, seventh round with Stephen Sullivan, who was really a tight end at LSU. And then a Lenore Ryan wide receiver, Derek Young, a couple of years ago, they're going to get a wide receiver. And most likely they're going to draft one. They'll sign a few in undrafted free agencies afterwards. But you're right. Tyler Lockett is not here for the long haul.
Yeah.
He, at every chance we talk to him, he hints about his life after football and his real estate agency and spoken word and helping Tulsa, his hometown, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and the issues in racial equality that he is involved in back there. He's got a lot more than football going on. He's 31 going on 32. I would not be surprised if, not this year, but the end of his contract next year, one of these 2 years is his last year playing football. So they need to replace that. Smith and Jigba is young enough to assume that role, but he's such a good slot receiver that you wouldn't think they want to move him around a lot. DK Metcalf is going to command millions and tens of millions, $100 million here in 2 years. They have to make a decision on whether they want him to be the foundation of the team with a new quarterback. So that's a long way to say yes. They're always in the market for quarterbacks, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they drafted one in the middle of the late rounds.
And speaking of DK Metcalf, this is the offseason rumor that won't go away. Fans love to speculate about what he might bring in trade and that maybe that would be the right move. And given what you just said, that he enters into the last year of his deal next year, huge cap hit, and he'll still be in the prime of his career, still be a young guy, and with what receivers are getting on the open market nowadays, in some sense, is this year with – In this Ryan Grubb system, new coaching staff, is this a prove it year for DK Metcalf that will determine what they do next with him?
I can't really answer that yet because I don't know how Grubb's going to do his offense. I mean, is he going to consider DK Metcalf as his Rome Odunze? Completely different receivers in size and style, but are they going to use him like Penix used Odunze? I am of the belief that DK Metcalf should be the centerpiece of what you build around and that you re-sign him and give your new quarterback a stud, physically dominant receiver. Every team in the league wishes they had a wide receiver that was bigger, faster, stronger than anybody could can defend him. And the Seahawks have had that. They haven't maximized his talents. He hasn't maximized his own talents in his 4, 5, 6 years now in the league. But to answer your question, I don't know if he's so much prove it to the Seahawks or John Schneider whether he's worthy of a contract, but proving to Ryan Grubb how they want to use him and how Grubb's system fits Metcalf. Hmm. If Pete Carroll was still the coach, it was a lot of things if Pete Carroll was still the coach, I would say it's a no-brainer that they're going to re-sign him for $100 million-plus dollars next year before his contract expires. But no, I don't know that with McDonald now in charge. DK Metcalf is always going to be a fan's curiosity because of his freakish physical talents and the fact that there's this perception that they haven't maximized those talents. And well, yes, they could get a huge haul for him if they traded him. They wouldn't have DK Metcalf anymore if they traded
him.
So I believe they're going to keep him. The only way they would possibly entertain trading him is if they wanted to trade up in the top 10. And get one of the top three quarterbacks or four quarterbacks. Again, that would be counter to everything John Schneider's ever done here in Seattle to trade up into the top 10 to get a quarterback. He doesn't draft quarterbacks. He doesn't trade up. He doesn't give away picks. That would be the antithesis of everything he does.
Yeah. Greg, I really appreciate it, man. This was cool. I love the work you do. You're the best out there.
I appreciate that. Thank
keep you. Up the good work. So that
appreciate being on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Appreciate all you do. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Let's do it again.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Anytime.
Thanks, Greg. One thing I love about doing this and doing this in this market, in this fan base, is there are a lot of people who produce Seahawks content. And then obviously the traditional journalists such as Greg who cover the team on the ground. And to a man, they are all really, really cool people and very gracious with their time, and which is why you see me have so many other content creators, podcasters, journalists on the show. Because we're all just enthusiastic about what we do and about covering this team and analyzing this team and getting someone of Greg's knowledge and experience and someone who's around the team on a daily basis is something I enjoy doing, and I hope that comes across to you, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. Be sure to subscribe and do all the things in all the different places. And until next time, as I always say, forever and always go Hawks. Thanks for watching, guys.